All right, we're gonna dive right in, okay? Hopefully you're getting something out of this class. If you do the work, you're gonna have a massive shift in your life. Straight up, I've already gotten several emails suggesting that. And this work, if you've noticed, can be a little confronting, and you gotta use your mind to think differently. And we need that. As Einstein says, right? We can't solve the problems at the same level that they were created in. We've got to think differently, bigger, wider, more rigorously. Okay, so ground rules here, similar to last time. Now, I should be able to. Can someone just type in their Q&A box up there, a question? There's like a little Q&A thing for some of you, I think. Just type something in. Hello. Just type in hello, and let me just see if it worked. So that's the chat box. Yep, Russell and Oksana. And then there's some other people, Terry, Jessica. Cool. Karina. Great. So I'm getting questions. That's good this time. Last time we had a little challenge there. Awesome. Okay, so meanwhile, I'm going to dive into the Facebook questions first. But no need to leave questions there. I would just close out Facebook, please, so you can show up and be present here. I'm just going to go in there and read the question and answer those because those folks can't make the call, or some of you can, but you wanted to get your question in. So those are the questions I'm going to answer first, and then we'll come over to here to the chat. So you can, if you want everyone to see your question, it can be right in the chat box. If you don't mind, if you want it to be personalized, I think it can be sent privately to me if you'd rather not. If you want to ask an anonymous question, you just got to type anonymous first and then type your question because that tells me you don't want people to know it's Jason asking the question or whatever your name is, okay? That way we can accommodate a few different preferences here. Awesome. Okay, and you can also raise your hand. I see Oksana and Monica have their hand up. And that means you want to dialogue with me about a question, okay? The shorter you can keep the content about your question, the better. I don't need a big long backstory. Just drill down to the question with a teeny bit of context on the front end, okay? Awesome. This is being recorded, of course, and will be played or replayed. An email will be sent to you of the replay tonight or tomorrow. You'll get that via email, and it'll be in the members area, okay, with the other calls. Awesome. What's up, Mimi? All right, Brenda. Hey, Jason, I'm stuck with identifying my core strategy. Remember, the core strategy is sort of the thing we did as a result of our contraction or wounding to not get further abandoned or left by the big people and to get acceptance from friends, peers, siblings, parents. I see that I used several: good girl, helper, performer, and orbit the other, all about them, chameleon, all about them and being a chameleon. So that's a lot Brenda's got there. The strategy is different for each parent as well as relationships or work. Okay, fair enough. I don't have access to many childhood memories around how my parents treated me or how I behaved and used strategies. I would appreciate additional ideas, tools on how to determine primary core strategy. It's the one you use the most in your life currently. So, is your core strategy. So, whatever you get paid well to do, that has something to do with your strategy, right? So, for example, I get paid well to coach people relationally and to teach about relationship. And that rose out of a perceived deficit around relationship. And also, my strategy was to not necessarily do relationship well. My strategy was to feel into the room, feel into the big people, empathize, and what do they need, right? What do they need? Where are they at? What's the emotional state? What do I need to do for mom to get mom off my back, to get mom to not leave me and give me the silent treatment? It was mostly about me and mom in terms of my relational thing there. So, you see what I'm saying, Brenda? So the primary core strategy is most likely the one you're doing still in your life, and we will do it for the rest of our life. We just want more choice around it, and we want to embody it from our heart and be like choosing like, yeah, this is how I want to help people. A lot of therapists never question their helper, and it's pretty neurotic. They're just helping people because they're in their childhood pattern. So I don't know what you do for a living, Brenda, but that's where I'd be digging. Okay. Karina, I would love to talk about a couple I'm working with and the way they get stuck in blame, how my own stuff is interwoven to it and ways to work with it. Great. So Karina, raise your hand and we'll talk if you're on the call. Let me quickly see if you are. Yeah, great. So Karina, we'll talk here in a sec. Christy, okay, this is hard for me to admit, much less post here, but here goes. I'm having a hard time in my own life right now. I have a 16-year-old daughter going through normal 16-year-old girl stuff. That's the easy part. LOL. To add to it, my 22-year-old son has moved back in with us and is wrestling with his own issues, mainly me. My own core complaint has to do with my mother. To be honest, me dealing with her, we actually haven't spoken in 5 years, and him lashing out at me has put me in a depressive spiral that includes a constant anxiety. It has put a sudden stop to my studies. I'm not used to any of this. I'm typically not depressed or anxious. I guess I'm looking for some help or guidance on how to move past this. All right, when we're depressed, particularly the kind of depression you're talking about here, without knowing you too well, is you have, you're injecting other people's shoulds about how you should be, and you're not going to be able to live up to those, and you're depressed about it. That's typically low-grade depression, is when we're trying to be someone we're not. I should be a certain kind of mom. I should be more on top of my game than this. I shouldn't be depressed. I should be make more money. I should, you know, that kind of shit. I realize all this emotional work going on in our house is a huge trigger for both my son and I. Typically, I can coach others on how to keep moving, but I seem to have lost my own way. Wow, I really get the vulnerability and the intensity for you here, Christy, in the way that I can right now. And it sounds to me like the mom cut off 5 years ago. You know, your son's moving home to get you to face that, probably, so that you're more resourced to deal with him. Just a random guess there. And then, do you even want your son home? You know, the parents can't help sometimes, but have the kid or child move in because the love, you know, I love them. Like, what am I going to do? Kick them to the curb? Yeah. Yeah. We need to teach our kids lessons, and kicking them to the curb is exactly what we need to do if they're behaving in ways that are out of integrity to how we roll in our house. But we have to be so ferocious about our boundaries with that and be willing to just see them go live in the street. And a lot of parents just aren't willing to do that kind of warriorship around, you know, yeah, I hear you. And if you continue to treat me this way, there's no, you know, there's love in my heart. You have a home in my heart always, and not in my actual house, because you don't get to talk to me that way, or you don't get to behave this way. If you're going to live here, you're going to be respectful. You're going to pull your weight. You're going to do X, Y, and Z. And that's the program. If you don't adhere to the program, you leave. And it sounds like you're not really resourced enough to get into kind of a boundary. So it's like, I would be looking at, okay, what blew me out? Was it my son moving back in? Was it this stuff with my mom? And dealing with her that's caught me kind of like, oh shit, what triggered me into this place? You know, Christy, I would get to the source. Is it your mom or your son? And is it you beating yourself up because you are judging how you should be doing it, right? So find out what exactly started it, and then you can get to work there doing the 180 that you're learning here. Monica, I'm struggling with getting out of my head and sinking into my feelings and embodying them. Anyone else? A lot of people have that one. I think that's what you mean by being present and being emotionally with someone. It plays out in my relationships. Doing the 5 C's, I realize my core strategy has been to analyze and become everything the man or date is looking for. It's exhausting. It's so exhausting. It's fear, right? Anything above a 5, we go out of our heart, up into our head, and we're in, you know, some kind of hypervigilant state because we're looking for threats. We don't want to get left. We don't want to be rejected. We don't want to be hurt. And so this is very conceptual. People are just, it's hard for them to be in their bodies because they're trying to figure everything out and look for threats. It's a very wise strategy, but it's exhausting, like you said. And the relationship fails again, and I struggle with rejection attachment aftermath. Can you give some examples on how a conversation sounds like when you're trying to attract a man? I intellectually get it, but no embodied experience. Yeah, I'd work with my fear. So you're scared, and you're scared to be left. You're scared it's not going to work out. You're scared it's going to fail. You're scared maybe finding the wrong person. That's just all fear. So you got to go back in time. The ways to work with fear, right? Fear is about imagining a future. It's not real, right? It's imagining something in the future is bad's going to happen. Or it's being afraid something from the past is going to repeat. So you've got to address if there is anything in the past, you turn around and you look back in your past and you're like, okay, have I ever been hurt before in relationship? Yes. Have I ever, but specifically the very thing I'm afraid of, you said maybe rejection. I'd go back to the rejections in my life and I would start to do the 180 on them in terms of seeing how those rejections helped me. Because so long as you stay stuck in a perception that they hurt you more than they helped you, you're going to fear repeating that. But the person who balances this out and says, hey, you know what? I got pretty fucked up by that thing that happened in the past, but man, did it help me. Man, did it set me on my path. Holy shit, did that thing serve me. And when we truly see it in a balanced way, we're not fearing that thing anymore in the future. Okay, Jessica, my question is, when looking at our core complaint or wound, we're tying it back to our family of origin stuff, mom, dad, etc., and we've also been asked to look at it in the context of a disowned, dislike parts of ourselves, something we do in ourselves. Is it one or the other or both, depending on the wound and the situation? It's both. Whatever you reject outside of yourself is something you've rejected inside of yourself. Whatever you're triggered by outside of yourself is something that is unfinished inside. So the very first step in the 180 is to just, it's a very simple gestalt exercise, and that's own the projection. Yeah, but she's really aggressive. I'm not aggressive. I'm just a really nice person. No, you're aggressive. Where are you aggressive? You got to look and see all the ways in which you're also aggressive to the same degree as her or the other person. So that's the very first step so that we can get out of the fantasy and stop kidding ourselves that we're different than other people. Like, yeah, but I don't do that. You do it. You just do it differently. So this one's uncomfortable, but when you push through and you get this one, it's like, oh yeah. And then immediately what's cool is what happens is the other person, the charge goes down. It starts to go down anyway, because it's like, I'm not pretending I'm not a bully either. If I'm judging someone as a bully, they're a bully, bully, bully. I had this thing with this bully years ago, and I was like, fucking guy's a bully, man. I'm not a bully. I'm like the nicest guy ever. But then I saw all the ways in which all these memories flooded back to me and all these ways in which I have been a bully my whole life in certain ways, in certain contexts, right? So you do that, and then you do the second step, right, which is to see how whatever event or behavior in them that you don't like, how it served you. Melanie, can't make the live call. I could use some help clarifying my core strategy. In a nutshell, in order to keep connection with my mom, I held myself back from doing G too well at things in my life. Doing too well at things in my life. So she halfway through a process like country tennis training or being a big play, she would say, it's not really worth going anymore. And she was too busy to take me, so I wouldn't go. Wow. That feels significant. I didn't object, but just short and or shrunk. I see this playing out in my adult life as feeling really inspired, taking action and struggling to finish, and then leaving it until the last minute and not doing such a good job. Hell yeah. Way to fucking identify this pattern. So I think a great skill I developed was to sense where people are at and meet them there, as that's what I did with my mom. Yeah, and then you're turning your dial down to meet your mom where she's at. You don't want to continue to shine your light too bright and keep kicking ass, right? Because if mom sees that, you're going to lose a relationship with mom. This seems a bit sketchy, though. I could really use another perspective. Thanks. So we're looking for your core strategy. That's your original question. Yeah, I mean, to me, what I get from your share here is that you had a strategy which is to dim your light, and a lot of us have this one, where we don't want to outshine our parents or a sibling, and so we will dumb ourselves down and stop getting A's, we'll stop winning, and we'll start losing a little bit to level the playing field because we want to fit in. We don't want to be the overly smart kid or we're going to get made fun of, we'll get our ass kicked. So we stop performing well. And so one of your strategies is to minimize yourself, probably, right? Sounds like it, based on everything you're telling me. Yeah. Again, because there's a big fear here, right? What's Melanie afraid of? She's afraid of mom getting upset, maybe going into a depression, maybe getting hitting her, hurting her, leaving her, whatever was going on in her family, that mom, the bad thing that mom's going to do if Melanie like steps into her heart and just in her fullness and just is like expressing herself in tennis or and just doing really well, whatever it was, right? Yeah, this turns into adults who never really win, and then they wonder why. Yeah. Whew, nice. Okay, Karina. Start with you here. And I'm going to unmute you. There you are. Hey.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going pretty well.
Good.
Yeah.
All right.
So, my question.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of context. So, I'm working with a couple who are really good at blaming each other.
Yeah.
And I've seen them like 3 times. And usually what I'll do is I'll see people 3 times and then I'll just kind of evaluate whether or not it's working for me too.
Yeah.
Good move. Like, am I the right person and are the right people for me? And we're about at the 3rd session. And so the thing that I'm curious about is I've got a strong reaction.
To like, the blame or to what?
Yeah, to the blame. I'm just kind of like, and I don't know if this is, so the reaction is like, it's a bit like I feel judgmental towards them about it. Like, just
like, get your shit together, guys.
This is the fucking 101.
Right.
If you can't commit to this, you're fucked.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to work with people that aren't able to get some traction here, but I feel fierce about it. Like, it's not like chill. I mean, and I can see them shift. Like, I can see them start to go into taking responsibility and me catching it and going like, we're not doing that here.
Yeah.
Can you speak from an I statement? Can you come back to yourself? Can you?
Nice.
But I'm curious about so if I look at my own history, I have had this more subtle, it's more subtle now, but I can sneak blame in there subtly.
Yeah.
And I've also had colleagues' relationships where I felt blamed over and over and just went, I can't do this anymore. Like, I just, it's too much work for me. So I guess my question is like, it's just like, how, what's mine? What's theirs? You know, like, how do you see this?
Okay. So it sounds to me like there's a slight growing pattern here of you drawing in some blamers into your life.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's good because they're trying to help you heal this in yourself, right? So I love that you're even open to that. And I really appreciate how you're working with a couple, like setting boundaries, like, no, we don't do that in here. So I would keep doing all that. And at the same time, like behind the scenes, you're doing your own work to look at why I've drawn in blaming into my life and what this says about me. So 2 things. First one is you got to start owning. You pick the person that you judge the most as the biggest blamer in your life. Could be that couple, it could be someone, a colleague, it could be your parents who's like never takes responsibility, right?
Right, right. Or it's all about me doing something wrong that's creating an experience for them.
Right. They're blaming you, yeah. And you just see how you do the same thing. So the first thing is to own that you blame to the same degree as they do.
Yeah.
Which is going to be a hard one, probably, because you're like, yeah, I blame sometimes, but I don't really blame like them. Right. So you got to actually write it down until it's like, aha, I am such a fucking blamer. Like I totally blame. Because the fantasy here with the personal growth thing is that we're going to reach a place where we just stop blaming someday. It's not going to happen. You'll blame for the rest of your life, just like the rest of us. Right? You are.
Because
we're not disowning. We don't want to disown that.
Okay.
It's a fantasy. I mean, you could try your hardest. Feel free. My guess is you've already tried. I tried really hard for years to not blame. And I stopped having my no blame rule and said, okay, it's instead of a no blame rule, it's kind of a rule, like let's not blame, but let's use our blame to get underneath it. So it's instead of blaming, it's like, okay, let's use your judgments to get underneath your judgments.
Yeah. So if I'm using the blame to get underneath and the judgment to get underneath, it almost feels like I'm getting underneath what might be a value for me. Or something that I'm wanting that I'm not saying, or something I'm taking a stand for.
Absolutely. There you go. Yeah. Yep. So you got to start, and you got to start see when people blame you, how is this serving me? That's just the simple question. How's this serving me?
Well, it's giving me the experience of what it's like to be on the other side of that, which is intense.
It's intense.
Yeah.
Yep. And, but how would it be if this person said, you know what, Karina, I'm blaming you for being late and doing this thing to me. And I can kind of see it enough that it's actually a judgment. If I'm more honest, I'm judging that you're X, Y, and Z. And now I'm starting to learn that like, oh, I judge all kinds of people and it's really not about you. And what if they started taking responsibility, right, using their blame as a doorway, right, to step into responsibility?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Then it's like, it's okay to be blamed. It's like, oh, thanks. Like, it's okay. Like, no problem. I'm glad you're getting clear on your judgment.
Right. But it's taking it off of them.
Yeah. And you got to own that you're as blamey as everyone else. Mm-hmm. And this is for everybody on the call. And then you also need to see how being blamed or you blaming other people serves you and serves them.
Okay. I can do that.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Good to see you. There we go. Okay. Nice. Going back up at the top in the Q&A is here. Garth, what's up? Cool. I've approached my senior manager and asked for time to attend the webinar justifying his personal development, which will bring value to my student relationships. Nice. I've had a lot of help, I would say, transformational from doing the 5 C's and partner calls. I finally seen and faced my core fears and strategies, which PTSD had until now kept locked and secreted away from me. Partner calls, practice reflective listening and sharing impact has been empowering, and now I'm bringing this practice into all my personal coaching. Really nice. This has given me tools, feeling like I can be a man in man's world without just lying down and being walked over. I'm enjoying my new sense of presence and empowerment. Awesome. My question is related to a book recommended in one of your recent podcasts by David Data, The Way to the Spirit of Your Man. I got the book and I'm reading it. I wish my dad had. Okay, I'm trying to get to the question here. I'm reading portions of the book to my son and friends. I'm editing my reading of the book because some of it's direct content. I wonder what you would do. My question is, if your son's 19, I wouldn't be editing it. Unless you're like grew up super religious and you're worried about stuff. If you have certain swear word value boundaries, you probably wouldn't be talking to me. So I wouldn't be editing anything for a 19-year-old. My question is, would you give this book to young men who are still virgins? Absolutely. Also, because I'm working with young boys at school, the question relates to them also. I mean, you could pull the group in the Facebook group and say, hey, would you guys, those that have read Way of the Superior Man or David Data, would you recommend this to teenage boys? Some teenage boys are going to be like, mind's going to be blown. Others, they're going to not get it. It's not even going to connect to them because they're going to be like, this is stupid. So it kind of depends on who you're, I don't like to give books to people in general, but if I did give a book to someone, I vet out whether they're ready for a book like that. But if you feel like you're already reading it to your son, feels like you're scared that he's going to find out something quote, bad or something in this book. So I wouldn't be censoring it myself. And then you're saying you want to connect with Metering Rap. This is how you connect with me, Garth. Because this is a mostly recorded class, I'm not really that available for this. This is not, when I teach a live course, like my 9-month relationship school course, I'm much more available. Or if people are training with me to become relationship coaches, I'm even more available. So that's how you get me. All right. Kelly, what's up? Jason, a while back, you spoke about altruism and that we're really overly altruistic. I'd say some of us are, and I would agree based on my own experience, and it's definitely one of my core strategies. You also spoke about owning your narcissism. My partner and I are committed to and work hard within the PACT model. I feel like I've seen this question before, Kelly. It's great you're working with PACT. Through that work, I've had the opportunity to own my narcissism, which shows up every time I'm choosing to not make a pro-partner choice, even when my partner's triggered. However, on the flip side, my overly altruistic side creates inner obstacles towards essential self-advocacy, which diminishes not only my ability to be there for myself, but the relationship and my partner ultimately. And I find that my core strategy actually can take something as awesome as PACT and turn it against myself. What are some mindset shifts or practices that can assist me in transforming this tendency? Well, Kelly, I would say, what part of it do you turn against yourself? Give me an example, and then I can take that further. Stuart, what's up, man? What's your take on Tatkin's take on self-validation versus other validation? I tend to see it as a carburetor air fuel mixture. While I'm striving for self-validation primarily, I do keep a porous channel to enjoy the other validation inherent in relationship. It's a tricky dance, but tracking myself and how I give myself away from or try to please the other helps me orbit around myself while staying open to lovingness within the other, thoughts, feedback. I think what you're asking, Stuart, is just the difference between self-validation and other validation and when it's one is appropriate over the other, et cetera. I think that's what I'm reading into it. So I'll just take a stab at that. Well, what I'm learning from Stan and my wife, because she studies with Stan, is that validating and reassuring our partner is essential all the time, over and over. Honey, I'm not going to hurt you. Honey, I'm here. My intentions are good. And I say, my wife and I are actually going to do a podcast on this, probably that will come out next week, on why it's so important to be able to reassure our partner. Stan calls it leading with relief first. So most of us grew up in families where we couldn't relieve ourselves. We wanted relief from the big people, and so then they never showed up, let's say, to relieve us and to tell us it was going to be okay. So we found a way to make it okay. We masturbated, we went outside, we played with the dog, we dove into books, whatever we did to kind of like find a little bit of relief, sugar, food, whatever our thing was. And kids are smart, so they'll figure out a way if the parents are going to give it to them. But there's still that, when we grow up, there's still that desire, that human desire to like, because we're pack animals, we're mammals, and we protect each other in the tribe and the pack, we want reassurance. We want someone to let us know it's going to be okay. And in a long-term relationship, I think you know what I'm talking about here because you've been married a long time, at least last I remember, is the longer you're in a relationship, the more this stuff gets triggered, the feeling of not feeling safe, especially if we're going through a challenging time in our marriage. So it's the work is to make the marriage safe, emotionally safe, and like, hey, honey, I'm here. I care. And we say the thing that would calm them down, not the thing that would calm us down. We learn what would calm them down. And this is part of co-regulation versus self-regulation. This is why I'm a huge fan of Stan's work, because it's working in my own marriage. We co-regulate each other. We relieve each other. We tell each other it's going to be okay. We have totally have each other's backs there. And when we don't, we fight until we get there. Yeah, good question, man. I don't talk much about Stan's stuff in this course, by the way. I do more now in my live courses, but there's it's really important. really important stuff. Okay, Gavin, how do we balance the androgyny as a goal in relationships while keeping the passion alive? I listened to a good amount of Data's work that promotes being in the third androgynous stage, but choosing either to bring masculine or bring feminine during sexual intimacy. Do you agree with that, or do you have a different approach to keeping sexual intimacy alive? It feels too formulaic for me, Gavin, Data's stuff, that in order to have a sexy relationship, you have to have polarity, and this is how it looks and works. That's a really common teaching in the sexual stuff I've studied, and it works. That's why people teach it. But year in and year out into marriage, I find that the more present I can be, when I'm present and my partner is present, we don't need to do roles or something. We don't need to step into, hey, honey, can you be a little softer and receive me while I like take you and like be a man? And it just feels too contrived to me. So I think what I notice about the polarity work that David Data promotes is it's really works for people in either open relationships or people that are dating. I don't know that I talk to many people that have been married 10 plus years, 10 or 20 years, and it's still like, we do the polarity stuff. I mean, it can be fine to like role play that, but I don't know. It just doesn't, you know, I would push you back to your own experience, Gavin, and just be like, you know, at a certain point, ditch David Data's thing and like go get really present and find your own way. And I think what you're going to discover is more important and is going to work better for you. Yeah. All right. Thought I saw a hand up. Rosemary. Hi.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. Okay. So dealing with a lot of stuff, but I'm just going to try to condense it into one question.
Sweet.
So I'm pretty good at the, like the 180 stuff. Like I went through the homework in terms of like stubbornness. I'm not in a relationship now, but the last one I just ended, that was a big problem. So where vibe and stubborn, where has that helped other people, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. So I'm pretty good at implementing the 180 thing on things that are happening now or recent past.
Okay.
Having trouble implementing it in like big things from the past. I think with like moms, like I talked to you a little bit ago about high school guy pursuing me in private, not in public. And maybe I can just label that as like just not a very integrity filled person.
Okay.
How do I like apply the 180 to a big thing from my past as opposed to like this chief complaint I have in this one relationship right now?
So let's do it with the, it's a good question. So I'm having you guys do the exercises. You get more practiced and you keep doing this. You can kind of broaden it out a little bit. And I think it still can work well. It does for me. It doesn't always. And when it doesn't, I get specific. So if you ever feel like you're getting a little too broad or too stuck, it's too ambiguous, you got to get more specific. So with yours, you were interested in this guy who would be interested in you in private, but not in public, right?
Yeah.
And you have charge around that.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So you'd go back to every time that actually happened, which was probably only a couple of times, maybe a handful of times. Because a lot of what the brain does is we just make a sweeping generalization now. He's always this way. But if you're honest, how many times did he actually do this to you that you can remember? Do you have a memory of?
Like probably 5 times I can explain the exact thing that went on.
Like where you were sitting in the schoolyard, who you were with.
It was raining out. Yeah.
Okay. So you got to get that specific into the memory of, okay, there was this time we were eating lunch. He was totally cool. And all of a sudden a bunch of people showed up and he just like peaced out, you know, just didn't even look at me. So you take event by event and you say, when he turned his back on me in the public setting, How did that serve me?
Okay.
What did I do? How did it, like, I look at first, well, what did I actually do? Well, I shut down. I fucking collapsed. Well, and then what happened? What did you do after you shut down? Well, I went home and I binged. I talked to some friends. Whatever you did. And you start to paint a picture of and get in the memory of, like, what did I really do? And how did me really doing that serve me? Maybe you got really into art. Maybe that was the catalyst that you got you into a certain band in high school. And then you started playing music and then you were in a band or something. Like, we need to see how that hurt, that hurtful experience served you, right? And then backing up one step, you, of course, want to own the projection that you are this way also, that you will be really caring with someone in private, and then you get into a social situation and you blow them off, or you're less respectful, or you don't attend to them in the way that they like or prefer. You want to see how you're like that also. So you're not carrying a fantasy again of, I'm not like that. But I would go to all five of those memories and go exactly to the memory where you were sitting, who you were with, and then how it served me. What did I do? How did that strengthen me in a certain way? Well, I didn't get strengthened. I got weaker. Well, okay, getting weaker, how did that strengthen you? What did you learn when you got weaker? Did you, you know, get into studies more? Did you get better grades? Did you fail out of school and then had to get transferred? You got to look at exactly what happened and how it served you.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah, a lot. Thanks. Okay.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, glad we could take that to the next step. Mimi, I'm not understanding co-regulation. I was like, core regulation? What's that? Co-regulation. No, you don't. I'm not teaching a bunch on co-regulation right now. I will be. But it's... you know, if you read Stan Tatkin's book, that's a good start. You could just Google co-regulation, Stan Tatkin. And then I'll be doing some podcasts on it. He's coming back on the podcast as well, which we'll talk about. Okay. Laura, what's up, Laura? Your short video on flirting brought up a question for me. You seem to be saying we should recognize our personal boundaries and communicate them to our partner. But if witnessing our partner flirting with someone else upsets us, isn't that potentially valuable trigger? I struggle with setting boundaries with my partner because of wondering which triggers I should embark or embrace as my own work versus which triggers I should attempt to remove by asking my partner to do things differently. Ooh, this is a really good question, Laura. It's being where we're at. So what I mean by that is, let's say you are triggered. The fact is you are triggered when your partner flirts with someone. If that hurts you and upsets you, yes, there's work to do for you there so that you can calm down. In the meantime, you can ask your partner I have a need. I need you to not communicate that way with women like her, because it triggers all sorts of insecurities in me and I get freaked out. And then your partner can be like, okay, well, I'd like you to, you know, work on that, because I'm clear, I'm in my integrity over here, and it feels playful and fun and clean for me. But if it doesn't feel good to you, I really care about that. And so, yeah, I'm totally willing to not flirt in that way with that type of woman, for sure. Especially if you will also work on feeling more confident there. If you'll do that for me, and it's kind of like a deal, but you want it to feel fair. Human beings like fairness. So, I talked about this on the Facebook Live the other day about needs. You get to ask for what you need, what you need, where you're at. All of us are somewhere else than other people, but right where we're at with our sensitivity and our unique disposition and constitution and who we are, be where you're at. I feel insecure here. I need you to not do that. Okay. If it would feel better to you, I'll come home at 2 a.m. instead of 3 a.m. Would that help? No, that's too late still. Okay, how about midnight? Yeah, great. I can do that for you. But I have to be, if I'm going to do that for you, I have to not resent you for that. I have to really get that it's actually going to help our relationship. It's for the relationship. I'm doing this in service of the relationship. If you always relied on your partner to kind of squelch your insecurities, that partner will get burnt out on doing it for you. But we're all a work in progress, and what you can say in any given moment is that I'm a work in progress, and right now, this is a big trigger for me and a big insecurity, and I would appreciate it if you would do X, Y, and Z. Are you up for that? And if you've got a great partner, they're going to be up for it because they're invested in the relationship and your well-being, because you being not triggered helps them, you know, co-connecting. It's like, so it's a both and here, I think, Laura, is what I'm saying. All right, Russell. Hey.
Hey, man.
What's up?
Digging deep.
Great.
So you know a little bit about my story, recent breakup, and I've been, you know, deep in uncovering my part of this whole thing. And her and I spoke a little bit here and there, and so I've been discerning, well, definitely reevaluating it as my stuff comes up and seeing my part in it. Like, for example, I haven't felt safe. And so she'll do things to fulfill that, or make me, quote unquote, feel that I don't feel safe.
Like she does some behavior and you get triggered by it?
I'm just being triggered. Yeah. Yeah. She does some behavior, I get triggered by it. And then as I dig, I realize, okay, I haven't felt safe most of my life. So I'm seeing that thread through that, same way with this last example, and then comes a question. Like I felt, you know, she can't show up. She's not able to show up. So as I dig, I realize, like, I set it up so people can't show up for me. So it's over and over and over again, everything like that. Anything that she's, quote unquote, done is really triggered from my childhood wounding and my story. So I'm just trying to discern, like, well, you know, what the reality of our connection actually is. You know, is it like a trauma bond or a wound bond? You know, or is there a love bond? Is there actually something really real here? And what is a healthy boundary as I'm going through this whole process with her? We talk a little bit, definitely very, just, you know, very almost like push away. Like, I didn't want to talk to you at all. And I'm trying to find a healthy boundary about it.
Are you guys in a relationship right now? Or it's kind of like you're not and you talk? I don't understand.
Yeah. We're not. I mean, we've broken up. And then it's, but then again, I mean, then it's interesting because like there's still, and we've broken up, but then there is, you know, we're still talking. There's still something going on. Something doesn't feel resolved.
Totally. Yeah, it's not. All right. A couple thoughts, Russell, is it sounds like a trauma bond for sure, which is a healing bond.
Mm-hmm.
But you both have to agree to put a container around it and let's heal together. Otherwise, it's not going to happen.
In a container, can you elaborate a little bit more just so I can...
Yeah, we're dating. We're in a relationship now. We're in a monogamous situation. And these are the parameters of our container. And this is what's okay. This is what's not okay. And let's heal this, because she has a big wound going on here too.
Yeah.
And that's you guys are a powerful match, only to the degree that you're willing to step in and work on it. Otherwise, you're just like dancing around each other and kind of poking at the issues and not really dealing with them. You can go deal with it on your own, which is great. And I encourage you to do that regardless. But, you know, a couple that is like, man, we trigger the hell out of each other. We clearly are a good match for healing.
Right.
So do you want to heal? Should we do this? Because we're going to this is going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's already okay. It's so uncomfortable.
You know, and so you have that conversation though, and then you step into this, you know, container, which is called just some exclusive relationship. And you go, all right, let's go for it. Let's get the tools out. Let's go to therapy. Let's find some good resources and let's commit to burning through this shit. It doesn't mean we're going to get married. Let's just like see if we can like tackle this issue and like commit all in for 1 year or 6 months and just go. I think six
wow.
months is too short, but all year, let's go all in. Let's heal this fucking thing and get as far as we can.
I'm so gripping right now. My temperature's gone up like, you know, 15 degrees right now.
Wow. Shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the only last point about it is like, you know, I've shared some of my story of this, like, you know, feeling betrayed or things that have happened. And I've been getting to the point of seeing my part of how I betrayed others. Like you nailed it in yesterday about I was like, no, I haven't betrayed her like that. I've betrayed someone in my life like that. So I dug and dug, and I'm like, wow, where have I done the same degree? Different. And I finally found it yesterday. So that is the only way I'm actually at this point of even possibly considering that, is like, wow, I've done differently, but to the same degree.
Yeah.
It shredded me.
Yeah. Mm. So yeah, it's got to happen in a container. And if it doesn't, if she, like, let's just say, like, I would be, you know, you have an opportunity right now to practice boundaries, to, and back to Laura's comment of being okay with your sensitivity, where you're at and what you need around safety. Mm-hmm. You have some safety needs here.
Yeah.
And definitely. She's not able to provide that. So you're asking someone to, like, provide some safety, base level safety that she can't probably do for you.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, then you move on. You partner with someone who is willing to help you feel safe enough to do the work, and you both go start doing the work together. And again, if you, let's say you never partner, which wouldn't happen, but let's say you didn't, you just keep working your level of childhood trauma from the past of feeling unsafe and getting your nervous system to begin to, you know, feel safer and safer and safer in situations that might not be safe to your old self, right? They're just, but you're, right. You're like, man, I'm stronger here. This is okay. Look at me. My nervous system isn't fucking going berserk. It's okay. And I did this. So you can get places on your own. I think it's faster with someone else, but you can get pretty far on your own.
Mm. Yep. All right. I'm willing to, yeah. It's tough to say it, but I am willing to do it. I mean, her and I are dancing anyway, so it's like, might as well call it and, you know, be 100% all in and just see what's what.
It's all in or all out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, like, I even think about or hear a voice and I, you know, I feel unsafe immediately. And so then I go back to, all right, well, I know this coming from my childhood, from, you know, the way I grew up.
Yeah.
My childhood, which I read you that. I shared with you that the message. So I got the core of it. Now it's just quote unquote healing in relationship, as you've shared.
Yeah.
Wow.
Stay with it, man.
Thank you.
All right, bro. Good to see you. Yeah, one more suggestion for Russell and anyone else here. One of my favorite things to do is, if I'm stuck in a pattern, like you could say Russell's in a pattern, right? If I'm stuck in a pattern, I got to see what I'm getting out of it. So this is where you take a list of 50 benefits, 25, 100. What am I getting out of staying in limbo with this person? What am I getting out of this kind of push-pull with this person? Are we dating? Are we not? What am I getting out of that? People stay stuck in that shit for years because they're getting something out of it. So write down what's the payoff, the perceived positive payoff to what I'm getting out of that. And one of the things you're getting out of it is you're avoiding doing the work on a deeper level of safety. If I can stay in a push-pull with you, I don't actually have to ever address really feeling safe. See that? I can just stay up here like complaining about it. So you got to look at what you're getting out of it. All right. Okay. A couple more questions. Nice. Oksana, I'll see if I can get to you here. Keith, my pattern, don't trust. Last partner was lesbian before with two different relationships. I felt judged in bedroom performance also when she brought up being with other women. History with mother, sister, wanting to trust, but not being able to. With seeing this, I am healing that pattern. Felt in the past it was all and only to get crumbs. Okay, maybe you gave me more context up above. I think you're just reporting out. You're making progress there, Keith, which is awesome. Yeah, we don't need to settle for crumbs, but again, you got to look at what you're getting out of it. If you're getting crumbs in your relationship, what am I getting out of crumbs? It's kind of working for me. Because maybe I'm too scared of the whole enchilada, right? All right, Rachel, my problem with blame is generally the opposite you discuss. I've always been able to see and understand the way others' actions help me and teach me, but I struggle with judging and blaming myself. Two big fears, stories I tell myself, are being a burden and also letting myself become wanted or needed, and as a result, lost in a relationship, probably because a core strategy is putting my own needs aside without even realizing I'm doing it. Bingo. I often let these fears prevent me from making full, vulnerable connections with others. Of course, I guess I'm afraid of both wanting and needing and also being wanted and needed, fear of losing connection with others or myself. I struggle with maintaining both simultaneously. Can you discuss doing the 180 in reverse? Would I be finding 15 people who have done things for which I blame or worry about doing myself? Background of a childhood caring family and early adulthood with serious health issues when where I needed help from others. Yeah, caring for my family. Gotcha. Okay, so I wouldn't recommend the 180 in reverse. It's I'd have to ponder that for a minute. I'm trying to get present with your question here. You got to see. Yeah, I guess it. Okay, so here's a couple different thoughts. Benefits to me asking for what I need, because you see more drawbacks. What do you know? Me stepping into my needs and actually having needs, what are the benefits to that? Because you've already got the drawbacks down. So, well, if I needed something from someone and I said that, let's see, I could actually get a need met. I could get a real mutual relationship because right now it's one way. I'm the helper and they're the helpless. You know, you'd have to stack up so many so that you can start seeing that you stepping into your needs and putting them in front and center instead of aside is going to serve you in your life. Like a lot of people like you with this personality style, they might have grown up with invisible needs. I don't need anything. I'm cool. Because that's the strategy they used to make sure the family didn't get upset. And they didn't want to rock the boat anymore. So it's like, nope, I'm cool. I don't need anything. And then those adults have autoimmune diseases. Those adults completely, they have some illness or symptoms. Why? To get them to have needs. Right? Okay. I think that's probably enough, Rachel, but let me know if there's more. Okay, Oksana, I'm almost there. Rosemary, follow-up question. If there's no time, that's okay. Once I've realized I, too, have tendencies to push a partner away in public, then what? What do we do when we realize we're needy, too, for example? Well, again, we're going for balance, right? We're both the neurotic person that pushes people away, and then we're the neurotic person that pulls people toward us. Pull, push, pull, push. We do that. And depending on the year and the issue and where we're at in our relationship, we want to feel like, oh, I do both and it's okay. I push people away. I pull people toward me. I send them mixed messages sometimes. And usually it's around, we can drill down into the specific issue and the specific target, then it has less charge on us. And we tend to need to polarize so much to get our attention. Part of the reason we polarize so much into one or the other side is to get our attention and to get someone else's attention and to get us in enough pain to do something about it. It's just feedback, right? All right, Oksana. Hi.
I have a question about POS. So my okay. POS per se is perfectly in order. I'm loving it and I'm enjoying it a lot. So do you have any suggestions on fine-tuning it? So the order is completely fine and I'm thinking, well, sometimes I'm not as effective, efficient in how I kind of put my strategies and how I organize my work. So anything else to do there?
Well, give me an example. Can you? Because you're being a little too vague. Like in what area? What area are you wanting to be like more organized in or whatever?
Let's see. So the second one, that would be kind of around coaching and business stuff. So I feel like there is like mountain of stuff I could learn and mountain of stuff I can do. And what ends up happening is I do a lot. I spend a lot of time thinking about it and I'm just not producing results or something that I judge as resultable. So is that the judgment that it's not really?
You have a fantasy.
Hmm.
About the kind of results you should be getting.
Hmm. And that makes me unproductive.
Well, it's going to, yeah, you're going to frustrate and be like, because you set the bar too high or too much of a fantasy, not realistic enough. So you're going to fuzz out. You're going to, quote, sabotage. You know, that's what it sounds like to me, is there's not a realistic goal, or realistic, maybe their goal's realistic, but your timeline isn't realistic.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the fine tuning. Yeah, I think I was missing that. Thanks. And I have an intellectual question about NLP. So I tried to kind of do very superficial research about it, and there was a lot of kind of this scientific critique about it, if it's really working. So I was wondering if you could just like speak to it, and how does that relate to what you're teaching and what we're learning?
Yeah, I haven't studied NLP. I know a little bit about it, so I'm probably not the person to ask. I know that the people that I know that do it well, they seem to have a lot of success with it. You know, okay. It's a different way of changing stories and beliefs, right?
All right. Okay.
Yeah, I would just keep digging until you find your own answer there.
Yeah, more research. Yay.
You geek, you.
I'm loving it. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
I've had, awesome. I don't know, like 20 partner calls in these 4 weeks. I'm so amazed about this. So this is a shout out to all the people out there. You're amazing. It's just incredible how motivated everybody is and how they're really honest and diving so deep. I'm just amazed by it. I'm inspired by it. And I'm, yeah.
You mean the people in this course?
Yes.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Cool. Shout out everybody. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for that. That's my appreciation. And the stuff, of course, the content, that's rocking too.
Cool. Thanks, Oksana. Good to have you here.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Oksana is going to be joining us next year in the longer apprentice training. So I'm really pumped. We're going to, do you think this is good? Way to, Jesus, the shit we're getting into right now is, yeah, it's good. Okay, Rachel, Rachel, you might have a follow-up question there, Rachel.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi. Yeah, so I just wanted to follow up a little bit on the question. You hit the nail on the head when it came to, growing up into an adult with autoimmune problems, because that's, I grew up, I had to take, my family was sick, and there was all kinds of problems. So I had to be in charge of everything and take care of everyone. And
there's a cost to that.
There's a cost. I developed a lot of autoimmune issues. And so I've had like pretty much my whole adult life been, and late teenage years as well, been spent a lot of time with doctors, hospitals, surgeries, all kinds of things. And I've always been very much afraid of being a burden. So I do 99.9% of everything by myself and don't tell people when I'm having problems.
Yep.
But sometimes, you know, but I do sometimes need, there were 6 months where I couldn't walk, and I was in a relationship at the time, and I stayed with him, and there was like, he was always very acutely aware and voicing like how stressful it was and how awful it was having to take care of me and how he didn't want to do it. And it was like things like,
Rachel,
that.
I just want to try to bottom line it, cause we're almost at time.
Yes,
there an additional question or comment?
Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out. So if I'm afraid of being a burden because of how it impacts somebody else.
Totally.
How do I, cause it's not about how, what it will give for me. It's about, I'm afraid of impacting other people negatively. And that's why I ask about the 180 in reverse. Like,
okay,
how do
so
I
stack up benefits to being a burden for other people? List out everybody you're afraid of being a burden to, and write down 50 or 100 benefits to each person, you being a burden to them.
I can't think of those.
Exactly.
That's what I've tried.
You're blocked. That tells us you're invested in your pattern.
So you, like, with the 180,
yourself.
you look at it from the other side.
And you turn off your computer and you just sit there and stare at the paper and you think and you get really present and you try to see how this would actually help people if, and we can change the language. You're using the word burden, but
right.
What's a positive spin on being a burden? Having needs? Like me having needs specifically around X, Y, and Z, how would that help other people?
The only thing that I've ever been able to come up with is it gives two things. It gives them an opportunity to get to know me better, and it gives them an opportunity to learn how to be helpful and selfless.
Rachel, look at what you've done your entire life. Are you saying you didn't get anything out of that?
Well, I learned how to care about other people, I guess.
And do you like part of yourself for the ways in which you care for other people?
Yeah, but that's still only like one thing. Or a couple things. Like I can't think of like 15 of those.
You can. You're just not willing to. So I'm going to challenge you to go back and do the work. Or where you stop is where you're stuck in your pattern and you're more invested in seeing more advantages than disadvantages to your situation. So you'll keep doing your pattern. And you might have to get sicker for you to get so fed up that you actually do something about it. So I'm challenging you to push yourself here. And another reframe, instead of seeing it as a burden, it's like, what opportunity do I give people when I actually have fucking needs? You know how good it makes people feel when they get to show up for you for once and what they get out of their life and the trickle and ripple effect of that? You got to think here.
Yeah, I mean, I do that whenever a friend needs something, and I'm there for them. But that's can I do it in 15 like different instances? Like if I let someone show up in this instance,
absolutely.
Or does it have to be like? So it doesn't have to be 15 things that are completely different. It can be like 15 instances where I've needed somebody, and how in each one of those instances, because I feel like the benefits are very similar.
Get specific.
That's why.
Get specific. Absolutely.
Okay, so it is similar to doing the 180 kind of in that way. It's just...
Just stack up benefits here to you having needs.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
All right, awesome. Okay, so, you know, I'm going to challenge any one of you, when you get stuck, you must stay with the exercise and push yourself. And if you're confused, like, you know, maybe she's a little confused on, okay, well, I want to make sure I'm doing it right, fine. But we will stop right where we're invested in the pattern. That's where we stop. That's what I notice about myself. Anytime I stop, I'm like, I don't want to do this. Change the channel. Because I'm not ready. I'm not ready to be done with this one, you know? Okay, guys. Just went over time a teeny bit. I'm psyched to be with you all. I appreciate the... energy, enthusiasm here, your guys' questions are good, you know, rigorous. Tells me you're actually doing the work, which is really helpful. I'm appreciating those that are engaging in partner calls. You're going to get a lot more out of the course if you do that. You know, it's just going to take it to the next level. All right, I want to just quickly, before we hang up here, remind us when we have our class 9. Does anyone know? I'm looking at my calendar here. Why do I not see it in here? That's today. Interesting. Maybe it's in a couple weeks, March? February 27th. Okay, so if you can, keep moving on the work, February 27th. Yeah, I think you're right. We're going to do class 9, which is just some addendums and some additions, and we'll do more Q&A. Okay, so bring your questions to that call also. February 27th, 12 p.m. Mountain Time. And keep digging in, guys. I'm loving what's happening here. Appreciate, you know, your honest, thoughtful, heartfelt questions. So thank you. Okay, I think that's it. Practice, practice, practice.